What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Cheeky Midweekie, where we are making strength and conditioning not boring anymore. And today, I am joined by a former colleague of mine, Kyle Hashimoto. Moto is now the head baseball strength and conditioning coach for the UCLA Bruins. Moto and I worked together for over 3 years at Towson. He had left Towson, went to UIW, went to Long Beach State University to work with the baseball team, and now, like I said, is working at UCLA. Super proud of the growth and progress that Moto has made in his career, and I think that's going to be one of the biggest things that you're going to enjoy in this episode. You're going to learn that there are trials and tribulations. You're going to move. Moto's from Hawaii, lived in Iowa, lived in Maryland, lived in Texas. Now he's in California, and you're going to learn how to adapt and move throughout your career so you can move and climb up the chain. Moto's now in P4 as a head baseball strength and conditioning coach. So if you're looking to move up the career ladder and you want to get advice from somebody that has done it, this is for you. All right, Moto, so you and I obviously know each other. Shoot, we worked together 3+ years. You've had a heck of a journey. You're now at UCLA, P4 baseball. We talked off air. The thing that I want to start here is with the quarter system. Talk about that, because there are other strength coaches that might be new to it. There's going to be a lot of coaches moving. How difficult is it, and how do they navigate it best?
Yeah, to be honest, the quarter system, the really, obviously, the biggest difference is the amount of time you spend with them. Like, we started like end of September, and then basically got done. Essentially, we're done after Thanksgiving, so of any mandatory training. I'm not sure how many weeks that is, but I know it's significantly shorter. And then taking account, like, their classes too, obviously, they're going to school for, I don't know, what, 5-6 weeks, and then they got midterms at that point, and then another 5-6 weeks. You have Thanksgiving, you got that dead week before, and then finals. Like, it's not really a ton of time, but you basically just follow the same principles you would as far as like semesters go. You send out programs during the summer, and hopefully they've done some stuff so they're not coming back. I know, wishful thinking, but you hope they come back ready to go, and you find out the first week. Again, I don't think it's maybe a crazy difference. You just have to adjust a little bit as far as what you're doing and maybe like the timelines you have, because now, again, it is a shorter amount of time. Like, you see things, like, people are posting things. Like, I remember the first week we started, people are already like 3-4 weeks into training, and I'm like, God damn. And then with baseball, like, their fall ball started for us. We had the shit show it was with trying to get our stadium and arena and figuring out where to play. But like, they're fall ball stuff is like 1 or 2 weeks in. So I don't really have a ton of time to really train these guys. And a lot of these dudes are coming off summer ball. So it's easy to just do what you can. And you condense it a little bit. But as far as trying to develop these guys, training doesn't really change. You pay attention to what's going on with them as far as, again, what they're doing for practices and the amount of time they're spending out there. But I wouldn't say it's a crazy change, to be honest. Like, again, it's just the time you have. So maybe your timeline's a little sped up, but other than that, like, I mean, you still train them. Initially, I started trying to just accumulate some volume, just figuring out, one, if they can train, and so I'm used to what the training that I was looking for. And from there, once things started rolling, we pretty much just started rolling. It's just, again, talking to the coaches, figuring out what their schedule is, and making whatever adjustment you got to make. But I don't know if that really answered the question, but
it does. It gives people some answers, because, again, you have the curse of knowledge, what you already know, and you don't realize as younger strength coaches that are like, oh, shoot, this is the first time I've ever been in a quarter system, and I'm supposed to follow this exact perfect periodization model that I learned, because they're brand new and fresh into it. So I think that helps them hear, hey, still adhere to those principles. The thing that I wrote down hearing you say that, that it just triggers and brings back to me, was the issue of mandatory training and the massive gap that our players had when we were at Towson. And you remember, we would not be allowed to train them the week before finals, and then the kids never reported till that Monday, the last Monday in January. So, like, we had sometimes 8 weeks where the players were off on their own, and then the coaches wanted to ramp up and go. You and I know what that was like. Is that what you're dealing with now at UCLA?
I'll be honest, I would say no. Obviously, you're at a bigger school. You hope you recruit better kids, potentially, better work ethics. And from what I've seen, I'd say that is the case. These kids will train. They'll come in. They'll do what I need them to do. Not really. I would say I'm not having to motivate them. Like, obviously, you're going to have instances where you got to push a little bit, but you're not going full rah-rah, screaming at the kids, trying to get them going. A lot of them are pretty self-motivated. They're relatively high achievers. They always know, like, they're competing for something when they come here. Sometimes you go to those smaller schools, and let's be honest, you're like, fuck, hopefully we maybe just last. So, but like when you're here, there's obviously a standard and a real expectation that they're legitimately looking to compete for the championship and try to win. That's what I would say. Again, I don't think it's too different from anything. You just got, again, like I said, you just got to follow the principles. And for me, like I got that from Sammons when I was at Washington. That's like probably the biggest thing he told me when I was interning there initially. Like it was, hey, like just understand all these methods, but they all follow these principles. If you follow the principles, you can understand the methods and then you can apply it to really whatever you're doing. And I think that's obviously helped me throughout my career as far as like switching from different sports, working with baseball, working with football, working with, say, softball, working with tennis, working with, I don't know if I said basketball, but going to basketball. Like I never worked basketball like 2 or 3 years ago and then start working basketball, but the principles are all the same. You're managing workloads, managing intensities, like working off the game, figuring out what their schedule is in season, what their off season schedule is, but it follows, you know, I don't want to say a framework, but it follows principles. They need to train in a lot of the cases and sometimes they aren't. So you just got to pick and choose your battles. What are your big rocks that you can do and go from there?
So you talked about your journey. You talked about playing a lot of different sports. We're going to circle back to that. But right now you're in baseball. And when I think baseball strength and conditioning, I obviously think about Descant, you, Justin Hong, Hunter Bell now down at Arkansas, and the other Eric Cressy. How specific, how specialized exercises do strength coaches that are considering working in baseball need to be? Pitchers, infielders, does it need to be different? And I caveat all that with there's a former Major League Baseball player that lives in a town near me here, and he works in a private sector gym, and he's like, oh, baseball players have to be trained completely different. Like he was talking to the owner of the facility, and he's like, baseball strength and conditioning is completely different than football strength and conditioning. Like, yeah, sure, on the field, but is it really in the weight room? Because if you look at certain things that people are posting, they're still doing athletic, explosive things. Isn't 80% of it all the same, or is it not? And you've been in it.
I'll be honest.
Get CEUs faster, cheaper, and more convenient than ever before with Strength Coach Network. Hey, it's Justin here to tell you about how Strength Coach Network can now help you out with our premium membership and CEUs to the NSCA and CSCCA. Upon signing up for our premium membership, you will get 2.0 or 10 CEUs immediately. That is an entire year's worth of CEUs that you are able to access from the convenience of your office. No traveling for conferences, no waiting on flights, no eating out, no expensive hotels. Just the good stuff from great coaches. Now, if you need extra CEUs for past years during the reporting period, we can bundle Fundamentals 1 or 2, which also come with 2.0 or 10 CEUs, to your purchase. That way, you're able to take care of your CEUs for the best price, most convenient, and learn from some of the best coaches. If you want more help with this, email us at service@strengthcoachnetwork or visit us at strengthcoachnetwork.com, and I would be delighted to help you out.
I would say yes. It partly depends on your level you're at, too, I think. Like, working in the college level, like a lot of these kids aren't, I'll be honest, a lot of these kids aren't really trained. Like maybe if you, the kids you maybe get that are trained are like football, like lifting such a big culture in football, like kids are going to lift. So I think it's starting to change now where kids have more experience, but even then it's not like they've got 5 years of hard, good training experience where they can get nothing out of it. Obviously, I think there are some differences, but you're training general things. Is what I think we're doing. To a degree, are there certain things, maybe I'll spend a little bit of time doing maybe what you consider more specific things as far as trying to reduce likelihood of injuries. Maybe with my baseball guys, like I'll do more shoulder work, more cuff work, that sort of stuff. But we'll do arms, like we'll squat, we'll do lower body stuff, we'll do upper body stuff. You're just trying to build the athlete a little bit. Now, obviously, if you're in the pros, things are probably, again, I've never been there, but if you were to go to the pros, like one, you've got the time to do it. You've got the resources to it. You're supported by all these people to help you figure that out. But it can be challenging when you got 30, 40 dudes. It's okay. Somebody wants you to individualize every single exercise, every single program. Like that's not possible. And you group them into certain things maybe that you want to do. But generally, again, I'll be honest, it depends on who it is. Is it your number one starter that say is about to get drafted? Okay. Maybe you do something a little different, but at the end of the day, general quality, you're trying to get them strong, get them fast, more explosive, and then they got to go out and play. And hopefully their coaches can help them develop that part of their game. But we see guys that suck, the least athletic dudes to ever walk the earth. And you know, like they can play. Like, well, I tell these pitchers all the time, look, like we're going to train. Like, I want you guys to get strong. I want you guys to get explosive. But the one thing I need you to be able to do, and I need you to be able to do, is I need you to be able to throw a ball. I don't need you to run, say, I don't know, a 6 second 60. Like, one, that's pretty fast, but I don't need you to be able to do that. If you can throw a ball, you can throw strikes, you can help us win games. That's the whole point, isn't it?
Yep. So within like, that, don't you, is there like strength and conditioning? Does it need to be specialized based on like the style of play? Let's say they're more of like, all right, get on base and run versus just hit, I'm hitting dangers. Does that affect how you have to train them or how the coach wants to see strength and conditioning work?
I guess that does come into play a little bit. I don't really, haven't really encountered that, but like, when I was with basketball, like the one thing, like one of the coaches told me one time was like the off season, like we got to train, like some of these dudes need to get a little bit bigger. Like you wanted to play like more physical. So like our dudes were skinny as shit. Like they were light. And now granted, not all that is just weight, but like getting stronger, bigger, faster, like it can help. Some of that is learning your leverages and things like that. But to say that a lot of these things wouldn't help or give you a better shot, I don't know. You compare it to, obviously the body's not a machine, but you're like trying to build the car, teach them basic things, how to make a left, how to make a right, how to turn your blinkers on, whatever, how to brake, things like that. Just basic things. And then hopefully when they go out to their coaches, like the coaches are going to teach them how to truly drive that car, race around the track, those sorts of things. But so that's just how I look at it. Obviously, I understand the body's not a machine, but to a degree, you're training them so that you can give the best product to the coach so that they can go coach the person how to drive the car and hopefully win some games.
What does that coach and you relationship look like to have success right now where you're at? Because a lot of people, that is the secret sauce. You and I both know that, but, and you're not going to have all the answers. I'm not expecting you to, but what has been some commonalities? Because like you said, you've been a lot of different places. What has been the commonalities for success? Head strength coach, head sport coach relationship. So that way you can ultimately affect positive change with the athletes. Cause I've seen you do it with Lisa and the softball team at Towson. You're clearly doing it to be able to get hired at UCLA. Like, what are some of your success stories?
I think honestly, the biggest part is just being around. Obviously you want to have all these conversations with people, but just being around them seeing your face, like even like with coaches, whether it's for us, like, all of us here, we would do it regardless, but my boss was like, look, like once a week or twice a week, try to get out to a practice for 10 minutes, show your face, say hi, and then you can leave. But obviously not everybody can do that. But again, that's what I did with like women's water polo. Obviously, I spent all that time with them. We were training 4 days a week. It's 6 a.m. I'll be honest, they're dead at 6 a.m., but who isn't? Everything, you do everything you can, but a lot of people are going to feel dead. So it's hard to have some of those conversations when kids just feel like shit in the morning. It's fuck me, I got to be here to train. You go up to the pool and watch them do your thing. And obviously I've never worked water polo, so it's nice to see how they train, how they practice, the things that they're doing. But again, just showing face, saying hi, whether it's the coaches, to the girls that are up there. But yeah, even baseball, it's just showing face. If you see them around, maybe they're on one of the fields just playing catch or something, just go shoot the shit real quick. But yeah, it's such a cliche thing to say, but it's the relationship part of it does matter. Like, having them understanding that like you care and you're trying to fucking win games. Like we're all trying to win games. That's all we're trying to do. You can go into the education part. Yeah, student athlete. At the end of the day, I think we're all trying to win games.
You mean there's not a big NIL fund to watch them take their quiz? You know what I mean? Does that
I don't need, not that I have no idea. You know,
the 12th man doesn't represent like the professor that's teaching them. That's not what Texas A&M is talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. That'd be a question for someone else.
You've lived in a lot of different parts of, so you lived in Iowa, you've lived in Maryland, you've lived in Texas, you lived in Cali, and you're originally from Hawaii. Talk about what it's like living in different parts of the world, because a lot of strength coaches aren't willing to move to find better solutions and jobs, and you are, and you have. So I want you to speak to that right now for the strength coach that's, I don't know if it's going to be worth it, or I don't know if I, or if I should, because you've done it.
I'll be honest, I think I was just naive about what the fuck was going on. But so I wasn't willing to go anywhere, do anything, clean bathrooms, whatever I got to do. But I don't know. I think the biggest thing was coming from an island, going to college and in Washington at Gonzaga. I'd been to the mainland before. Like, I've been around people like this, but it's just vastly different compared to how people are in Hawaii and the way things work and things like that. Don't get me wrong, Hawaii is great. I like going back whenever I can, hanging out, seeing my friends, but I don't know if I could ever work there. Like, people like don't really get things done. Like, you want someone to do something, they'll take fucking forever. You know? Island time's a real thing. But, like, coming up here, like, you want someone to do something, you get after them a little bit, or you tell them, like, they'll fucking get it done. But, like, now maybe they're very, like, blunt about things, and they say shit that maybe rubs you the wrong way. But I'll be honest, they'll get shit done. And that's a nice thing. But weather, obviously, a big one. Fucking doesn't get less than 60 degrees in Hawaii for the most part. And now, living in Iowa, when I first moved out there, fucking sucked. Like, the first year I moved out there was the worst snow experience of my life. Like, I remember having to pull my car over to the side of the road and walk home. That shit sucked. But I think part of me, I think, always knew, like, these spots I was always going to were relatively temporary. So it's like, okay, like, I can do this. I'm not really trying to, like, no offense to Iowa, but Sioux City, like, I was not trying to end up out there.
Hey, you take it easy there. Island boy, like, you leave us alone.
Like, I wasn't trying to end up out there. Like, no shot. Like, it would take an obscene amount of money for me to have to move out there. Then even Maryland. Like,
meanwhile, I willingly moved here. I can't.
What's up, everybody? Taking a quick break from the show to talk about one of our sponsors, Team Builder. I've been using Team Builder since 2019 when I was at Towson. I still use it with my remote athletes. I also use it at Goldfinch, which is the private sector gym I train at. And we use it at Centennial, which is the high school that I'm working at. Now, if you're printing on lift cards because you say, oh, I can't afford Team Builder, guess what? Team Builder has a pre-written grant that you can locate on their website. You simply change the name of you, your organization, and the areas that they highlighted, and they can help you get Team Builder at your facility, your university, whatever it is, so that way you can optimize how you train your athletes with this software. Now, Team Builder is also a part owner in the PlyoMat. The PlyoMat is something that I utilize at Goldfinch, and it helps you be able to see how high somebody jumped, the ground contact time, and RSI. You can get all that conveniently right there. You can reach out to your rep from Team Builder to be able to get more information on the PlyoMat. It's fast, it's reliable, it's convenient, and it's trusted by coaches worldwide. Check them out, as well as Team Builder, in the link down below.
Yeah, you got family out there, though, so it's different. That's true. You know. Yeah, Maryland, again, like, obviously the position in and of itself is basically a paid internship, so it was never a long-term solution. So I was like, all right, spend some time here while I try to get better and try to look for other jobs, and then the assistant job. I honestly thought I was going to be there for longer. Basketball and things just didn't quite work out, and it wasn't quite where I wanted to be, and I just got to a point where I didn't want to be there. I left and went through that moment of trying to figure out whether I still wanted to do it, and honestly, a lot of it is just opportunity, and I just got lucky to a degree. Like, I work hard, obviously. I think I'm a decent at what I do, but a lot of it is luck and who you know.
No, it is. And speaking to luck and who you went to UIW because of Huth and then left Texas State, so things had changed. So it's not like you were just like, oh, forget this place. No, things were changing, things were evolving, and you went to go and learn from him, and you've spoken highly about things that you've learned from him. And it's not that he was the end all be all and he's a god. Like, he's a very good strength coach, just like with Doyle. When I work with Doyle, like, there was, as a good assistant, and you did the same thing with me, Lima's good at this, he sucks at this, don't do this, which is what good assistants should be doing. So anybody listening right now, analyze whoever you're working with and be like, hey, I like this, I don't like this. When I'm in charge, I'm going to do this. But I want you to speak to, because you've multiple times talked about how well he can run sessions, how well he programs, dialing in percentages and sets. Like, I want to speak life into that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Huth was definitely very, very detailed in how he did things. He definitely surrounded himself with people who were competent at what they did. And all of that, I will give him credit for that. Like, assembling the staff that he had assembled where we were and the people we had, don't get me wrong, they were young and they did some degenerate shit sometimes, which is fine. But at the end of the day, they showed up for work when they needed to be there. They did what they needed to do. They were able to coach what they needed to do. And so I'll give Huth credit for assembling the staff and assembling a good set of people around him, which obviously makes a huge difference. But yeah, as far as his programming goes, again, it's very detailed. And I definitely took a lot of the stuff similar to how he set some of his stuff up and how he programmed, seeing how he did it. I definitely liked the way he did that. But part of the success I think he has is, again, like, the people you bring in, the sessions that you run, and the details that you're looking for and how you coach it. Like, don't get me wrong. Did we spend a god-awful amount of time training? Yeah. Again, like, I've told you this. You cannot say that those kids are not very well trained. They got stronger. They got quicker. They got faster. They got better at being athletic. And it gave, you know, us the tools when we're at UIW to be successful, obviously, with coaches and everything. And then they moved on, obviously, to Texas State. And you still see the way they do things. And obviously, it's very technical, which I think is one thing maybe I potentially lacked a little bit of. Now, obviously, situationally, you let certain things go. But for the most part, like, you want your kids to look as technical as possible. You're trying to get what you want out of it, depending on what you're doing. And he was very, again, very detailed in how he planned things out. And that's probably the biggest regret I have. Like, I didn't deep dive a little bit more into it when he was there with us working. But obviously, you still talk to him. You still talk to the guys that you worked with and stuff like that. And like you said, you take the things that you like from people, and then some of the things you don't like, you don't implement those things, but you see how they fit into whatever system and whatever situation you can be in. But again, like, they all follow the principles of
within training. What you said about training for a long amount of time, you all, like you said, the room is a lot smaller. Brett was really good at making people think that the room was bigger than it actually is. So if you have a small room, that means you have to have lots of groups to be able to get athletes in and out of that room. So like that factors in. So again, strength coaches listening right now, understand you can't just be like, oh, I want to do this program because this is what, hey, Moto does this at UCLA, so I have to do this. It's no, you can't do the program if you don't have that equipment.
That, and again, you need to understand what they're doing. You need to understand the principles. Like, crazy story. One of our interns that was helping us, like, we had presentations, and the guy, like, almost copied the program I had done because he had been following me. And when I saw it, because we were presenting to, like, the staff and stuff, like, fucking... Like, I asked him, I almost immediately knew that he had done that. And I almost immediately also knew that he had no fucking idea why we were doing it. Now, it was like a modified hypertrophy cluster. So it was real basic shit. But he asked some basic questions that if you're going to write the program, like, you should have somewhat of an idea of what you're doing. Again, it's not anything original that I did, but it was just a program that I had. And it literally looked exactly the same. And so I asked him a question, and it 100% confirmed that he had no fucking clue. And then I sat here and I literally just look. It looks like you just copied my program and you have no idea what's going on. And he was just speechless. Like, not a whole lot you can say, but it's just, again, like, copy programs. Like, that's when you're young, like, that's what you do. Like, copy programs, but you want to look to understand what's going on. The kid had no fucking clue. And it's, dude, you've been with me for 8-10 weeks. You're more than welcome to ask me questions. So it's just, what the fuck, dude? But, jeez.
That's, yeah, it wasn't great. Anybody listening, yes, copy programs at first if you don't understand it. Like, Boyle has talked, like, oh, you're a cook, not a chef at that point. Like, you have to follow a recipe. You have to follow the cookbook. But you can't just be like, oh, I don't even know what I'm cooking. Or, oh, I don't even know what I'm looking for.
Again, it goes back to understanding certain principles. Like, I don't have to, I'll be honest, like, I haven't really looked at any other coaches' programs, but I'm sure I could look at a program and figure out whether you say it's an in-season or out-of-season, whether you're trying to accumulate a bunch of volume, maybe they're trying to push strength, like, whatever it is, or a power session, whatever. Like, I should be able to look at another coach's program and get that general idea from it. Just, again, based off principles. If you're trying to, in your off-season, you're probably going to have your highest volumes. That's typically how it is, yep. I'd say, for every sport. And then in-season, not that you're just going to stay maintained, but you're ideally hopefully going to touch some heavier weights, but the volume is probably going to be the lowest in-season. That's usually how it is for most sports. Things like that. So again, it's just understanding the principles.
You talk about your journey. So now let's dive into where you've been so our younger strength coaches can hear it and learn it. But I want to also highlight the fact that you've worked with so many different sports. And I say that now because I feel like a lot of strength coaches that I talk to, they'll be like, oh, I want to get into this, or do I need to specialize to be this? Do you think you have to? Because I think you'd say no, considering the success in the different sports that you've worked with.
I would say no, but part of me is just says that, I don't know, it's just because it's biased and it's because that was my journey. Yeah, I don't know. It honestly depends. Like, it honestly, again, like I said, it comes down to who and being at the right place at the right time. Because when I worked with basketball at UIW, like, it just happened to be an opportunity where our guy left, and then Hugh asked me, would I be interested? And I was, I don't know if I really want to work basketball. Like, I liked working football. I liked working with the other sports. I had never worked basketball before, and I didn't fucking play basketball. Like, I suck, high effort kind of guy. But, like, I had never worked basketball. I'm just like, all right, fuck it, why not? And then took over the program and kind of went through the season and everything. And I liked it from the standpoint of I basically was only working with basketball. So I worked with men and women, so you're maybe talking 30 kids, which in the grand scheme of things is nothing. 30 kids, that's those teams where you could like truly individualize. And that, I think that's kind of, I don't know if that's where I would like to shift potentially, just not say basketball, but like working with more individual of a team. So not having to work with multiple teams. So say if it was only football or only baseball or only basketball, like that's probably my biggest draw. I'll be honest, do I really care what sport? Not really. I think it's just the involvement and being around them. I don't know. I think sometimes maybe I hang out with these kids too much because I catch myself saying the dumbest shit to my adult friends, my real adult friends, actual adults. Because let's be honest, these kids, these are all children. Like, you don't know what the real world is. Like, mom and dad are still helping you out. You're getting scholarship. You're not paying health insurance, car insurance, all that shit. Like, being an adult's cool because you get all kinds of freedom, but there's a lot of responsibility. But no, I fucking love hanging out with them. You just got to draw that line between still being the coach and making sure they respect you and being someone who's going to shoot the shit with them. Yeah. Which I think I've walked that line pretty well. Obviously, there are things like you can't really say to the public, but you'll talk to the kids about certain things, shoot the shit with them. But yeah, again, as far as if you need to specialize or not, I think it can help if you have a specific goal, but at the same time, I think maybe you got to figure out whether that's your actual goal and what you actually want to do. Because some people think it looks cool. Obviously, like we talked about a little bit, like everything looks fucking cool on social media. Nobody's going to post the shit that sucks. Nobody's going to watch it. Nobody's going to look at it. Nobody's going to give you engagement if you post that kind of shit. But I don't know, it gives you a false sense of reality. And again, I think being like, again, I said this, like understanding the principles has allowed me to go from sport to sport. Is my knowledge super, super deep in the sports that I have worked? In all honesty, probably not. But I would say it's vast. It's wide, which, again, has allowed me to work with so many different sports.
Yeah, but knowing you and knowing how you operate, like you definitely will go deep once you're in it, because that's exactly what you did at Towson. You were like, all right, hey, I'm in this now. I knew it. Now let me learn even more about it. That was always something you were pushing, yeah. Like, hey, learning the sprint stuff, learn change in direction stuff. Like, hey, how can I incorporate these things for the athletes? Like you started figuring out the 3D or the what's up strap, like any of that things to be able to provide better for the athlete.
What's up, everybody? Taking a quick break from the show to talk about one of our sponsors, Hawken Dynamic. I've been using Hawken Dynamics ever since I was at Towson, still utilize it today when I'm at the private sector at Goldfinch. Even brought the plates from Goldfinch over to Centennial to do some force play testing with the football team there. We've done force play testing with other high school athletes. It is something that you need to get. If you want more help with it about how to practically use it and you want to reach out to us, feel free to reach out to us at service@strengthcoachnetwork.com. Not only do I utilize it with lower body assessments, I use it with upper body assessments, plyo pushups, prone Y assessments. You can also utilize it for what I call an upper body isometric mid thigh pull, where essentially you're doing a push-up at the strongest range and you're pushing into an immovable force, so a barbell, same way you do an isometric mid thigh pull. Like I said, been using them for years, valid, reliable. The customer service is fantastic. Go check out Hawken Dynamic in the link down below and you will not be disappointed.
Yeah. Again, I think that has to come down to continuity. Like, again, it's been tough because like you go from job to job, maybe you work with different sports, things like that. So like I tend to put those sorts of things on the back burner once I start working with a different sport. Like I'll go deep dive into what I'm currently working with. Is that the greatest approach? Maybe not, but the goal here, being at this job, is to be here for a while, try to truly develop and be around these kids, be around the teams, have more consistency, you know, longevity. Obviously, everybody wants to get paid more, but this is a situation where I can do this. I like where I'm at. I like the people I work with. I like the teams I work with. Outside, you talk about your four Ps. The only thing that is not the greatest is the pay, but everybody's going to tell you that. But everything else is pretty good. Personal life is pretty good. This first quarter is a little rough just trying to figure all this shit out. But I figure once I get through this first year, we get to the summer, you'll have ideas of what you want to do. You're not trying new things. You're not trying to figure out how to fit whatever system you want to run to the situation you're in. So it's a lot less work on that end. Like the first year is always the hardest, especially for me, like coming into new situations, trying to get comfortable, like It can take me a little bit of time to get comfortable. I think I've gotten better at it, but I know like when we fucking first met, you probably thought I was mute. I didn't really say a whole lot. It's just there. Like I worked my ass off. Like I did things that needed to get done. Like I was real quiet. And I think that's just who I am. Like initially. Like, you want to try to build trust. I don't know. You don't want to come in too hot, but at the same time, you don't want to come in too cold either. So it's trying to find that balance. You can always take shit. You can always say more. You can't take shit back. If you say something or you come out real hot and they form that opinion of you, it's tough to change that one.
Tough to unring a bell.
Yeah. I don't even know what the fuck we were talking about, but...
How about, so baseball, we talked about this off air, but the new Big Ten baseball, you're not going to be traveling with them because of your weight room responsibilities, but there is much more extensive travel. How do you then work with operations, nutrition, to handle it all, to optimize the health and the being of the athlete, and then they come back, and then that's going to affect what you can do with them after a long travel, if they have more travel coming up, like... How do you dose that? Because that's what we are providing for them as strength coaches, is doses of a stimulus.
Again, and you've talked about this before. I can't remember who you're talking to. You were talking to someone in the NFL, but talking about schedule, knowing their schedule, knowing when you train them, knowing how long you have to train them. Knowing the schedule is probably the first thing like that I need to know before I start like putting anything on paper, before I start doing any program, before I start doing anything. Like, I need to know the schedule. Like, again, obviously it changes, but give me an idea of what the schedule is, how many days I have, what days are they ideally training, when are you traveling, when are you practicing, like all that, like those calendar dates that you want to know. When does the quarter start? When do they get back? And again, that's how I initially start, where it's just, you just got to know the schedule. Again, that's the biggest thing. Understand the schedule, understand how many training sessions you have, what qualities or what are you trying to train? Like, now, how do I fit this within their schedule? Obviously it hasn't come down to that point, and I'll be honest, I haven't really even planned a ton of it out yet. I'm still trying to just figure out their schedules right now, and I'll plan everything out in the next couple of weeks. But in season, it's just a lot of moving parts. Like, you never know when, say, all right, maybe they're going to cancel lift because they got to go practice somewhere or something, or the field's flooded or something, so now they can train. Mm-hmm. Those sorts of things, like being adaptable, being able to make those adjustments is huge. But again, it's just understanding what you're trying to get out of whatever you're training. And then again, you fit it to your situation, you fit it to the logistics, you fit it to the time constraints, whatever it is. So yeah, I would say, again, I haven't done it yet because this would be my first year here. But again, you follow certain principles. What am I trying to train? How am I trying to get it done? Like, it's there. Now you just got to fit it to whatever the schedule and situation is, which again is... Like, I keep saying it, but it's just because it's such a big thing. You understand the principles of what you are doing, what's important, and what you are trying to accomplish. And you hopefully can work with enough sports to understand, like, there are more similarities than there are differences. Obviously, there are differences, sure. But a lot of those differences maybe don't necessarily show up on your end. As far as the sport and what they're doing, oh, 100%. Like, football and soccer are not the same thing, but... To a certain degree, the goals are the same, but you're trying to get score more points than your opponent, or prevent your opponent from scoring more points than you, however you want to look at it. Like any of these games, it's like football, you're trying to create space for opportunity to score, and defense, you're trying to remove space to prevent or to have less opportunities for the offense to score. And same thing, whether it's football, soccer, whatever, the goal and, again, certain principles of the game are very similar. Now, obviously, soccer, you're running around for 90 minutes or 45 minutes or whatever at a time. In football, it's 5-6 second plays. But again, the goal is somewhat similar. Again, it's just understanding principles. What is the big thing that kind of connects all these sports?
And anybody that wants more understanding of the principles, you can get it at Strength Coaching Fundamentals, because we are here to educate you on that. And you're going to be able to earn CEUs to keep your certification. Outside of that, shameless plug for Strength Coach Network. For you,
I respect it.
Family's always been important, and you now have the ability to be closer to family. Talk about what that's like, and how you talk about the four P's. You talk about how family has made that job better for you. Talk about the value of that for our listeners out there that maybe have an opportunity to live closer to family, but the pay might be not as much as they wanted, or it's only a little bit more for a better paying, for a better job and a better title, but they are closer to family, but they feel disrespected because it's not more money. What is, because I know what it's meant to you.
Yeah.
Just speak life into that.
Taking a quick break from the show to talk to you about one of our sponsors, Powerlift. I used Powerlift when I was at Harvard, Maryland, and the University of Iowa. I was also part of the staff that had the new weight room at the University of Iowa, the 32-rack beautiful facility. I was a part of that. I also have Powerlift's equipment nowadays. Powerlift Strong, made here in the great state of Iowa, in the great country of the United States. They're able to work with you on any customizations that you need, logos, height, whatever it is, the limitations that you have. Their equipment is strong. The people there, they're very good people. Check them out in the link down below. And if you have any questions on how to work with them, reach out to us at service@strengthcoachnetwork.com, and we would be delighted to help.
I guess, again, like being from an island, like my whole family is for the most part back on the island. Majority of my friends are still back on the island. Like my close friends that wouldn't even consider them friends, they're family. Like they're all back home.
Vegas, so, Vegas is another island too, though,
bro. Ninth island, sure. Right, yeah. Like, ninth island. A lot of Hawaii people love to gamble.
Just ripping cigs and just get.
Yeah. Don't know where all the money comes from. I guess it's out there somewhere. But yeah, not for the most of my career, like up until now, up until I moved to LA, like I never had family near me. Like obviously I had friends, like you make friends with your coworkers, things like that. It's not still not necessarily the same. Like it helps for sure. Just having people around you that you can connect with, you can shoot the shit with. It's not necessarily just all about work. And that's probably like something like I didn't do very well at initially when I was starting out. Like I just put my head down and just read everything I could, spend every single day, 7 days a week. Part of it was like, one, you don't really have the money to do a ton of fucking things like that too.
Very fair.
So that was part of it. But part of it too was just like, I wasn't necessarily in the areas with the most to do around. Like when I lived in Sioux City, there fucking ain't shit out there, like Hard Rock Casino, but I'm not a good enough gambler and I don't make that kind of money.
Joining your people.
Yeah, like it was never a spot where I was like, oh yeah, this is it, Iowa, I fucking made it.
Well, it's because you were in Sioux City, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, venture out a little bit, bro. Half year.
But like, I didn't have anyone around me there, so like I just put my head down and just worked, and I think it helped me to learn as much as I could. It obviously gave me the book. I don't want to say book smarts, but the information from the book. Like we know there's a difference between what the book says and understanding that and actually implementing it. That's a big thing too. I'll say to like interns and shit is, look, the thing is to get experience coaching, you have to coach. That's just how you get better at coaching. But to be able to read things and to be able to understand things, like you can do that shit on your own. You don't need someone to sit here and tell you about it. Like you can do that on your own, especially with the internet and everything out there, the amount of resources that are out there. Like you can do that on your own. Always.
You've
you can
said
ask
this before at Towson. I want you to speak to this because it's on that topic. You've said in theory and practice are the same, but in practice they're not.
So that's obviously from what's his name, Ladin or whatever. What was that? I can't remember his book, but that was from him. Again, it's like the science and everything. Like it makes sense in theory. And if it worked like that, yeah. But like when you try to implement it, like the situation doesn't always work that way. Like science and the research and the theories, you're thinking perfect situation. Everything works out exactly how you planned it. Like everybody responded how you had anticipated. Again, you're talking perfect situation where everything works out. But again, like me and you both know that shit doesn't work out. It never works out. So just understanding, just because it's a theory and like people say it works, it doesn't mean it's always going to work with what you're doing. It just doesn't mean it's always going to work in the real world. And that's always like somewhat of that disconnect between the science and the art, the practice. You have all these studies that say certain things, or maybe they say opposite things. But in practice, like they don't work out like that. Whether it's implementation, whether it's how you do it, whether it's your ability to coach, like it just doesn't always work out like that. And so just understanding that there is a difference. Obviously, I think a lot of our stuff should be based in science and understanding the concepts and the principles, and it should make sense. But at the same time, sometimes shit doesn't make sense. But sometimes it just fucking works. Like not to be that guy. And again, I'm not saying go out and do a bunch of crazy shit and follow all the people that are doing crazy shit. But at the same time, it's maybe like they might be onto something. Like people who come up with different things that end up being successful, people look at them crazy at first sometimes. Again, obviously don't change your whole program to be doing all the David Reck, whatever stuff and whatnot. But there are certain things you look at and it's, it might be interesting, or maybe certain derivatives of it or regressions or things like that. But again, it's just the concept of what they're doing, like understanding those sorts of things. So yeah.
One of the things that I was thinking of there that might not be in science textbooks, but one of the things that when we were doing return to play with athletes, you were like, hey, let's start doing one step runs, two step, three steps, like just even if it's short, choppy, but like just getting them feeling like they're running again and like how important that is. That's technically not in a science book, but there is tons of value. And then we would see a positive response the next day from the athlete, regardless if it was an ankle, a hamstring, some version of a lower body thing. We're like, hey, now the athlete has built on confidence. Hey, I just ran yesterday. Holy cow, I'm recovering. And yeah, it was a two-step run, a three-step run. Yeah. But the value and the power that had for the next day and then the subsequent days of training.
Yeah, that's all the Derek Hansen stuff where it's like his return to running is basically it is running essentially, which is what you're trying to get them to do. Again, part of that stuff, somebody else did it. Like, again, none of the thoughts are original. Somebody else did it. They had some experience doing it. You either check out their courses or you talk to them and see how they do it. You start to try to implement it on your end. And obviously a great way to get better understanding of those things is to have to do it to yourself. I know like during COVID, like, fuck, I pulled my hamstring a couple times. So that's when I was like, fuck, I gotta figure this out and see what's out there and see how people do it and just happen to run into that. And so I did it on myself. And then you start to do it with the athletes. And obviously, again, like you see how other people are implementing it and you just go from there. Again, not really a ton of science, but sometimes the anecdotal stuff is there. Again, not just, it made sense. Like from a logical perspective, thinking about the principles and thinking about how things work, like it made sense. If you want to return to running, at some point you got to start running. And the sooner I can get you to do it in a safe manner, like the sooner you're going to be able to get back. His big thing is what's that coordination aspect of it is you start to lose the coordination because you just haven't done it. So even with some of my guys that had like meniscal things, like they weren't allowed to run, but I guess we're just going to do a bunch of marching. I need to pick your knee up, put it down, pick your leg up, put it down. Is it, you're not moving at velocity or whatever, but to some degree, you're still working some of those muscles, not to the intensity or to the extent as you would be actually running. Again, it keeps the coordination there. And I don't know, we see this sometimes all the time, like where people get hurt and I don't know, the maybe pull muscles off bone or have issues with that. And the body will compensate, the body will heal, it'll compensate. It'll be able to accomplish a task. That's the goal. You're trying to accomplish a task. You're not necessarily trying to say, make the hamstring stronger if you tear your hamstring. Yeah, you are, but you're trying to make it stronger so that you can run. Again, just understanding what that end goal is and then what are the steps in between and how can we get there?
What do you think is, come to the last questions here to respect your time, what is some of the like big things that you've noticed in the field of strength conditioning or big pieces of advice that you'd give older, younger, whatever age strength conditioning coaches to help push the field forward? Because we still are within our first 100 years and we're still improving day by day, year by year.
What's up, y'all? Taking a quick break from the show to talk to you about another one of our sponsors, Vitruve. I've been utilizing Vitruve for a while now, and I absolutely love the convenience of this app. The encoder is at a price that you cannot beat compared to the competitors. Also, I don't personally like the camera apps. I've known that they continue to break down, and I really enjoy having this encoder attached directly to the bar. Vitruve does that. Not only does it do that, but it'll show me velocity loss during the set, shows me average velocity, all of it right within the app. Not only that, for the app on the individual athlete, there's a Vitruve Teams app where now as the coach, I can see all the results from my athletes. I can API that into my team builder. And now everything that I'm trying to do, get better competition, better intent in the weight room, I am able to do with Vitruve. If you want more information about them, click the link down below, or you can ask us questions directly at service@strengthcoachnetwork.com, and we would love to answer those questions for you.
Biggest thing I would say was understand basic training, foundational, I guess what we would consider somewhat foundational exercises, whether it's squatting, hinging, pressing, pulling, whatever, like understanding those things and understanding it to a high level. I know it seems super, super boring, but if you look at some of the programs I've written at this point, they're super basic. Like it's nothing crazy. We're not going out doing 360 jumps with dumbbells in our hands, shit like that. Like we'll do some jumps, we'll do sprints, we'll throw med balls, we'll get a little bit strong, we'll build some volume, accumulate some volume, those sorts of things, like real basic. Again, I think the fancy stuff is cool and I think there is some value to it, but you gotta understand, like, I don't know. I would have to assume, again, I'd have to go to someone else's programs and look at them and watch them, how they implement it. But I'd say most stuff is very similar looking across most coaches' programs. Like a lot of people will squat, A lot of people will do single leg work. A lot of people will press. A lot of people will do chin-ups. Everybody does it. Now, how well you implement it, I think is a big thing. Because, again, very few people are doing things that I think are crazy revolutionary, where it's like different. So, again, I think biggest thing is just understanding, again, the basic principles, understanding foundations of being able to coach and being able to connect with the athletes, too. Again, like, that's probably something I, again, it's super cliche. Like, it's super, it's like one of those sappy bullshit things, but it's true. Like, sometimes they just want to shoot the shit with you. And when they come to understand you as a person, it can make it easier to coach them. Obviously, if you're an idiot and you suck at your job, I can't help you regardless. Like, sometimes people are super, super smart and they are really good coaches, but like, you have no awareness of the people you are coaching. And it's, you can't relay your information across to them. And they're not, or they're not going to pay attention. I can't remember who said it, but it might have been Boyle when he was talking to someone. But they gotta, I hate to say it, but they gotta like you to some degree to truly trust you. Like, if someone hates you, like, now maybe you run into the odd situation, but I would say that's a very rare situation where you're like, I fucking hate this person. They're really good at what they do, and I'm truly gonna listen to them. But you probably get better buy-in. You probably get better everything with someone to a degree. Again, like, it's not. You're not necessarily there to be their best friend, then that's the line you got to draw. But that relationship factor is important. Understanding, look, like, sometimes I'm fucking tired at 6 a.m. in the morning when I got to come in, but I'm here. We're going to get this work in. We're going to get it done. That's not every day is sunshine and rainbows. But for the most part, I would say it is. For the most part, if you're in a good spot, that's how it is. But you're never going to find a spot where everything's fucking great. And if you do, you are very lucky.
Yeah, that's any job. Doesn't matter if you're in strength and conditioning or you're in finance or in plumbing. Like,
true.
Not perfect.
They get paid a lot more, though.
True, but they don't maybe have the same personal life or sense of being those other things.
True, that's true. Like, I had the conversation with my mom sometimes. Like, you have family, like, or friends that have maybe chosen jobs where they're not the most happy, but it pays a lot of fucking money and like gives them the freedom to do other things they enjoy doing. I got a cousin who travels all the time, like, his work is pretty nice, makes decent money, travels all the time, but I don't know if he necessarily loves his job. Or it's, oh yeah, you think about this stuff either on your own time or whatnot. Like, I think about strength and conditioning sometimes all the time. It's not a bad thing, but it's just, oh yeah, you see something, maybe you see something, I'm like, oh, like, how could I implement that? Or what is that? That's cool. That sort of stuff that you're like truly passionate about. And I think like different people, you took the route where every day is, I, for the most part, I enjoy what I'm doing. Like, pay is not the greatest, but overall, like, my day's pretty good day in, day out. Like, I'm not necessarily, say, truly looking for the weekend, where some people are like 9 to 5s, or fuck, today's Monday, I got 5 more days until I get 2 days off. I think we all need that sometimes, but if that's like your entire job, like, I hope that thing fucking pays well. So
amen to that. I'm gonna let you go about the rest of your day. It's 8 o'clock over there for you. Appreciate you, Money Moto, and we'll I'll see you in the group chat and later.
Appreciate you.